Demar Media, for those of you who don't know them, you probably know their best-known brand, which is Enom, which I think, Richard, you're going to tell us is the second largest ICANN accredited registrar?
Yes.
Okay. And so Richard will speak, then we're going to have Paul Keating, then it's going to be your turn. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Okay, a little bit about us to start. We're an online media company. We create content. Our primary business is creating content and what we call passionate user communities for a variety of websites that we operate, a family of websites. So for example, we operate trails.com, which is all about things to do with camping. We create content and we create these communities of people who interact with each other. Currently for our family of websites, we have about 70 million unique visitors per month. It puts us in the top 25 properties in the US. And to give you some context here, it's roughly comparable to the sort of online audience that the BBC has. We're also the second largest ICANN registrar with 12 million names managed. We've been active in the ICANN process for about 11 years. And then most importantly, in the context of today's discussion, we're an applicant for a TLD. We are very pro the TLD process. We believe that new TLDs are going to create improved prices, improved services, and improved choice for consumers. Some thoughts on our philosophy of the IRT, what we think it's not about. We don't believe it's about whether or not there should be gTLDs. As previously discussed, that's part of a GNSO process within ICANN. It's also a mandate from under the Joint Project Agreement from the US government. We don't think the IRT is about whether TLDs require additional safeguards or not for trademark protection. We believe they absolutely do. We see a considerable amount of problems in existing TLDs, and we think that there is a very legitimate charter for there to be additional protections in new TLDs. We also don't think that our philosophy of the IRT is not that whether or not the IRT is a legitimate voice in this process. They were established by a board resolution and has been previously discussed. The IRT is just one voice in this process. We are another voice, and everyone who speaks steps up to the microphone or submits a comment is another voice. So what is this process about? In our view, it's about coming up with practical, workable, implementable solutions that have more benefits than they have costs. I think today we're going to hear people speak about in an absolutely legitimate way, about the concerns of trademark holders. I think we're also going to hear from people who speak in an absolutely legitimate way about the concerns of consumers and registrants who may be harmed by some of these proposed mechanisms. And so in our view, this debate is about finding workable compromises on these proposals that create the maximum benefit with the minimum harm. And so what are the principles by which we decide which mechanisms work best? We think that the IRT report itself does a pretty good job of that on pages 7 and 11 of the report. It talks about these checklist or guiding principles that were mentioned earlier. Let me read some of them to you. The recommended RPM should protect the existing rights of trademark owners, but neither expand those rights nor create additional legal rights. Should provide clear benefits to trademark owners and registries such that as many as possible will be incented to use the recommended solution. Should not result in unnecessary or undue costs either to the trademark owners, registries, registrars, or legitimate users. And so we think those principles capture the debate pretty well. We applied them to the 7 recommended solutions, and in our view, 4 of the proposed solutions fully meet those requirements, and we endorse those 4. We think that 2 of the proposals, specifically the URS and the post-delegation dispute mechanism, we think are not fully compliant with those principles, and so we've proposed some modifications to those 2. And we think that 1 of the proposals, the GPML, fails to meet the guidelines, and we don't think it's able to be compliant with them. So we're going to step through each of these quite quickly in turn. The IP Clearinghouse, we support it. I'm going to reiterate, I think, what was said in the presentation earlier. In large part, it does not create policy. What it does create is efficiency and standardization. We think it's going to save trademark holders a considerable amount of cost and time from not having to deal with dozens or hundreds of individual registries. Clearly, it's an important and complicated job, so the procurement and selection of that entity is going to be a task that ICANN's going to have to perform carefully. We also believe, and we've said this even before the formation of the IRT, that we think, even absent an ICANN mandate to create this clearinghouse, that the market would create something of this nature. Possibly it would not create one central clearinghouse, but it might create several, perhaps regional ones. We would be okay with that solution as well. We think the market's probably going to create this. However, we're also fine with the idea of ICANN creating one central. The primary benefits of having one centralized one are going to be greater efficiency and standardization. I think the primary concerns that we've heard about having one central IP clearinghouse are that it could in some way morph into a role or some have some authority beyond that which is anticipated by the IRT report. And so while we see that concern as legitimate, we think there's ways contractually that you can limit those potential concerns of the IP clearinghouse morphing in different ways. And so given that, we endorse the specific proposal that the one central clearinghouse for a variety of RPMs. Okay, the thick who is. We support it. It's never been mandated before. These are just statements of fact. I think some of these points I'm making, like they've never been mandated before. A number of registries have voluntarily decided to adopt a thick who is. Our reading of the comments is that there was quite good consensus on this. The concerns that were expressed about thick who is were, I think, predominantly about privacy-related concerns. I think ICANN has a policy mechanism in place now to deal with scenarios where a registry is in a jurisdiction where privacy would prevent the publishing of thick who is, so I think that contingency is covered in the draft applicant guidebook. The IRT report says that this thick who is essential to the cost-effective protection of consumers. And so what's happened, as some of you probably know, is that the current version of the draft applicant guidebook, version 2.5, it includes for discussion the notion of a mandatory thick who is on all registries. We support that proposal, and I would note that as there is no thick who is currently in .com or .net, which constitute 84% of all GTLD registrations, this is a very significant improvement consistent with the description of the thick who is as something essential to cost-effective protection. So this, I think, is a major and significant improvement.
Don't click, just ask.
Please. It's much better. Okay, Sunrise IP claims. These are the pre-launch mechanisms. Pre-launch being, of course, the first month or two of a registry's launch. The report has recommended that a registry can choose either from a Sunrise methodology or this IP claims that Jeff described earlier. Both of these mechanisms have been tested and proven with previous launches, particularly the Sunrise. The IP claims, not so much, I think, just in one TLD, but it worked quite effectively. It's a finite duration. So this is not something, IP claims, for example, is not something that lasts in perpetuity. That warning service that Jeff described would just be for the first month or two. We believe the IRT has actually even improved on previous Sunrises. The proposal that they've made is that a registry can choose, in fact, from the IP clearinghouse database, which marks and which they think are applicable to their own Sunrise and which are not. So, for example, in .shu, the registry could look at the marks and select only the ones that were in the classification of footwear. So previous Sunrises were more generic in their application, so we think that's an improvement. And we think there's quite solid consensus on these RPMs. We didn't see any significant criticisms of them. Next slide, please. And then finally, in terms of the RPMs that we fully endorse, this expanded algorithm, won't spend much on time on this one, except to say we just think it's very sensible. We don't think that it really alters much of what's probably already in the draft applicant guidebook. It probably articulates it better. Important to note that we're only talking here about cases where a visual, I think two important aspects here. We're only talking about cases where there is initially a potential visual similarity. So biz or biz in that example with a one in there. And when we're only talking about the RPM, then passing this off to a human who's going to make an evaluation whether there would be consumer confusion. So this RPM we also endorse. Next one, please. Okay, the next two RPMs we support, but we don't support them in their current format. We're proposing some modifications to them. The URS, we think, is potentially the most powerful RPM in the entire report. We think it has the most power to do good, and we think, though, it also it has some potential to do harm. And so it's the harm piece we want to fix, obviously. Here's some of the things we do like about it that are important for everyone to understand. It only applies if there's use of the name. So you can't file a URS on someone who's not using the domain name. The initial freeze that happens is only a freezing of the contact data. It's not a freezing of the website, so it's not disabling the website. The suspension that happens later after a claim potentially is decided in favor of the claimant, that would suspend the website, but the initial freeze is only on the contact data. There is a fairly high standard proposed, absolutely clear-cut cases of infringement. Only trademarks that come from jurisdictions that conduct substantive examination of trademark applications would be eligible for URS. There is not a default judgment if the registrant does not respond. So your failure to respond to a claim for whatever reason is not, per the proposed report, prejudicial to you in any way. The adjudicator is going to make their judgment on the facts as presented. The fact that you didn't respond should not influence them. There's no fee to the registrant unless there is one claim to one registrant for more than 25 names. So if you have one name that's subject to a claim as a registrant, there's no fee to you. Or if you have 24 names as a registrant, there's no fee to you. And then finally, as noted previously, the names aren't transferred, they're just suspended. So these are all things we like about the URS. We believe the URS is aimed at serial cyber squatters. That's the problem that's been articulated. We think that it's going to do a very, very effective job of shutting down those serial cyber squatters. The concern we have is that we think that the URS, as currently detailed, is going to be abused in certain ways. Next slide, please. And so we think it could be abused by overreaching trademark holders. It could be abused by just malicious parties. It could be abused by competitors. It's an effective tool, but it's a tool that could be wielded in ways that aren't planned. What we've done here is sort of put on the table some ideas that we have for discussion, and I won't go through all of them in detail now. Perhaps you could read through them. I might mention one or two, but these are some ideas that we have for ways to make the URS less likely to be abused by the sorts of parties that I just talked about. I'll mention a couple here. Price for a start. For one domain name, it's a $200 fee to the claimant, but for up to, and I keep forgetting this number, but it could be, I think, 100. What's the first tier? 25 to 100, yeah. So, 25. It could be used for up to 25 names. I think it's $250 up to 100 names. So, hypothetically, there is a $250 URS against 100 individual domain names and 100 individual websites. So doing the math there, $2.50 per evaluation. Not the intention of the IRT to be looking at 100 very diverse domain names with very diverse websites. The intention here, I think, is for one serial cyber squatter who's got a whole bunch of variations of the one name, probably all pointing to the same website. That's, I think, where the report's coming from. Our concern, though, is that the rules could then be applied to a scenario where I have 25 or 100 generic domain names with different websites, but they may well be subject to a claim from one entity, and the adjudicator is going to have to make that judgment, in the extreme example there for $2.50 per name, probably only half of which is actually going to the adjudicator. The other half is going to the process. So our thought here is let's have a debate about maybe increasing the price or even compressing some of those tiers so that there's less potential for abuse. The National Arbitration Forum, in their comments, I think are on record already as saying that, in their judgment, $200 is not going to be something that any capable adjudicator is going to be able to make this sort of judgment on. So that's one point of view, but we do share the concern on pricing. Another of these ideas that we think potentially has merit is if we are in fact going after serial cyber squatters, let's then raise the threshold, the minimum threshold of names subject to one claim. So let's say we set it at 10, or 5 or 20, whatever it is, that you couldn't in fact submit one URS claim on one registrant for one domain name. In fact, you'd have to apply it to a group of domain names that were the property of one registrant, and therefore it would perhaps more effectively target these serial cyber squatters. Next slide, please. The post-delegation dispute, RPM. Let me start here by saying that we don't view this, the problem here, we don't view as a very frequent or likely scenario. So cyber squatters are very smart, as has been discussed, and there are much more effective ways for them to spend their money than to apply for and get, or to purchase an existing TLD and to engage in sort of bad faith activities around that. It's just not a likely way for them to do that, because registries are such sort of big, easy, immobile targets. So cyber squatters are going to do, are they going to spend that money in different ways to infringe? So we're not saying that it's not possible, we're just saying this is a fairly low probability problem scenario. So there are parts of the proposed RPM that we like and there are parts we don't like. I think, again, Jeff, there was a slide of three sort of criteria for this. You know, the first two of them we endorsed. The notion that a registry must perform consistently with its contractual obligations and with its proposal undertakings, we're completely in accordance with, and we think that's a sensible RPM. The portion of it that we don't like is the third one, which I think was noted as being the more controversial one, and this is the portion that provides third-party beneficiary rights, in our view, and even more of a concern to us. It does so using words like intent to profit and bad faith and manner of operation that we think are inherently hard to quantify. And so given that we don't view this as a particularly likely scenario, and given that those particular provisions we think have potential for abuse, we would much rather see this RPM be narrowed such that the first two provisions are the ones that apply. You've got to do what you said you were going to do, and you've got to do what your contract says. You know, and we don't think that there ought to be third parties injecting in that role. We think that ICANN should be the one performing the compliance. As I've noted here, some folks feel that ICANN, you know, is not doing a great job of making its contracted parties comply. We disagree with that. There are some bad actors. There are few, and there are very, very few at the registry level for the reasons I outlined. So we don't think that we want to be bringing third parties into this. If there is a problem there in terms of compliance, we think that the solution should be for ICANN to increase its resources and its focus on compliance activities. And in fact, that is actually what ICANN is doing at the moment. Last slide and last topic, thank you, is the GPML. So we're fully opposed to this proposal, really from two perspectives. First of all, we think that the GPML will be extraordinarily difficult to come up with this list. And the reason for that is that the criteria by which you get on the list are inherently subjective. So we're already seeing, I think, in the comments, substantial disagreement on debate on not only what the criteria should be, but what the threshold should be. Should it be 200 trademarks in 50 countries? Should it be 160 trademarks in 90 countries? There is no sort of objective way of deciding what that should be. And so what's in fact happening is that the process is being forced into a sort of reverse engineering approach where the IRT has asked the ICANN, please look at some of these very well-known marks and tell us how many trademarks they have and in which countries. So to us, that just underlines the subjectivity of the criteria. So we think it's going to be very, very politicized and controversial about who gets on the list and who doesn't. If you're a company that just missed out on the list, you're going to be doing everything you can to reduce that threshold so that your mark gets on the list. If you're a country that has some leading brands who don't meet the criteria, let's say China, the leading brands in China may not meet the threshold criteria. We see a lot of political, governmental effort to jump in and sort of carve out exceptions for particular countries or regions. So we think it's going to be very, very hard to decide who's on this list. And you know, as we've said before, if it was worthwhile to go through all that pain, we think that would be maybe a good thing. But in fact, we think that the GPML really doesn't add a lot of value to the process. If we look at the top level, and you look at the existing draft applicant guidebook from ICANN, the GPML inclusion on the GPML gives you no more real benefits at the top level than you have in the existing guidebook. So at the top level, we don't see any added value. At the second level, inclusion on the GPML gives you what I would call quite marginal, limited benefits. If the list truly is a list of extremely well-known brands, let's say there's going to be 100 brands on that list, each of them will only get one exact match protection at the second level in a TLD. So when we think through all of the cost and complexity and controversy about coming up with this list and look at the benefits at both the second and the top level, our conclusion is that other proposed RPMs are going to much better satisfy the requirements, the objective of this RPM. I would also note, and I think other speakers will probably speak to this in much more detail, it probably does breach the sort of benchmark guideline that it not expand the existing legal rights, because it does create this sort of presumption of ownership of the term, let's say that people does get on that list, that in fact if you want to register the word people, you do have to go and seek a party to give you approval to do that, and that really is beyond existing law in most jurisdictions. And so in summary, we endorse more in the IRT report than we oppose. We think that the four RPMs that I started with, we think that they're sensible, practical, and that we should proceed with them. The URS we think is going to be very effective, but we think it needs to be modified to limit the abuse. The post-delegation dispute mechanism we think also needs to be modified to limit abuse, and the GPML we recommend that it be eliminated.